Who are the top 10 directors of the 21st century?
From old war dogs like Steven Spielberg still plying his trade today to newcomers on the block, which we're going to discuss in a moment, let's get into it right now on our top 10 show, Movie Mount Rushmore.
Hey, screeners, how you doing? It's me, the one AJ, Anthony Jordan.
And me, Nico Liro, and we are here to talk about the wonderful thing that we all love that brings us together as a film family and a film community. Movies. Specifically this week, the people who make those movies.
It's good to give them a bit of appreciation, isn't it?
I think it's necessary. And there have been some wonderful, wonderful visionary directors who have either come into power or continued to be in power in the 21st century. Shall we get into it?
Well, we will. But how will we rank them? How do we break down this?
Well, considering you ask, AJ, here's how the show works for those of you who are new. If you are new watching us on YouTube, please do like the video, share the video with anyone who you think may be interested. Hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Tickle the notification bell if you are new to the channel, because we basically do videos every single day of the week, so we want you to catch all of our content. But here's how the top 10 show actually works. We get a Sunday topic, we go our separate ways, we come right back here and deliver to you, the silver screen dudes, our film family, our individual top 10s. This week, I will go first delivering my bottom three. AJ will then deliver his bottom three. I will deliver my next two. AJ will deliver his next two. And then we will trade one apiece when we get to our top five. If at any time, well, we are running off our individual top 10 lists, one person has a movie in a higher position, that person will say...
punt.
And we will punt and talk about that movie when we get to the higher position. And once we have both rounded off our individual top 10 lists, we will create the movie Mount Rushmore. These are the four quintessential diverse must-see movies of the genre, which this week is...
top 10 movie directors. Okay, guys, now...
of...
the 21st century. Yes, my bad. Yes. Top 10 movie directors of the 21st century. Thank you very much, sir. Now, I was so eager to give it over to you guys, because what happens after we, the silver screen dudes, create your four must-see movies of a particular genre? It goes over to you. The screen is to crown El Capitan, El Numero Uno, the best of the best of the best, sir, with honors. And how do you do that? Well, you can head on over to at Movie MT Rushmore, but it gives me great pleasure. It gives me great pleasure to say that you can head on over to at Movie Polls for You. That's right. Good old JT from We Love Movies is back in the house, baby. He is the person we'll be retweeting, and he will give you the four contenders of that given category. Last week, our topic was, in fact...
there we go. Last week, our topic was the best movies set in one location.
And the contenders were...
12 Angry Men, The Breakfast Club, Buried, and Lock. I regret to inform you, AJ, one movie has been coach carted.
And the fact that you regret to tell me, I'm going to go with Buried.
Yes, sir. 3% for Buried.
Damn, that's kind of deep. Anyway, it reassures my claustrophobia. In at number three, I'm going to go with Lock.
Yes, and it didn't do much better. 6%.
Okay. Now we let them fight.
Yes.
Breakfast Club is lovable. But
I know, it can go either way. It can't.
It could go either way. But as we've discussed, there was one film that made me my 10 out of 10, so it's very hard for me to go against that film. I'm going to have to go for Breakfast Club in second place.
Clean sweep, brother. The Breakfast Club in the second place with 38%. Now, normally when you get 38% on a movie Mount Rushmore poll, you win. Not this week. 38% finished second with a massive 53%, our second highest ever poll. Is 12 Angry Men. And if you're wondering, well, obviously it's your second ever show on the YouTube channel. Of course, it's your second highest ever poll. This podcast is a podcast as well as being a video show for YouTube. And if you want to watch the podcast, it is available on all podcast platforms, as it says above. You can download it on Spotify or anywhere where you find your podcast. Just search for Movie Mount Rushmore. Now, with all that said, shall we get into it?
Right. So for the top 10 directors of the 21st century, this was a weird one for me because going back to our new show, it talks about how much you are involved in film. Now, I can always do a top 10 of the year. I will commit myself to that. But it's about who hits and what. It was a lot of muscle memory in this.
Oh, so, we're starting with caveats. Okay, yes. What are your caveats? I have to,
just because it feels a bit weird, like how it goes, but I'm just hitting it how I hit it. Now, this name hasn't been the strongest contender of...
You know, it's me starting this week, yes?
Indeed. Yes. So I will shut up and pass it over to you.
Very good. So the caveats that I'm going to lay out are... I am not talking greatest directors of all time here, of course, because my list would look radically different if that were the case. But I'm talking, when we go through my list, you may see some directors appearing low and you think that person with such a glorious repertoire of films that low. It's like, well, yes, based on the work that they have done in the 21st century. Yes, absolutely. And that's how I'm ranking it. It's not their body of work throughout the years, pre-20th, 21st century. I am evaluating purely the work they have done in the 21st century. So with all that said, my director in at number 10 is the brilliant Alejandro González Iñárritu. And what a director he is. Now, this is a director, he's this low, despite being such a talent, because he's only done two or three really notable films in the 21st century, two primarily being Birdman and The Revenant.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that Amores Perros was a 90s movie, and that came out before the 21st century. Although 21 Grams, if I'm not mistaken, was... Let me just track this. 21 Grams.
I think it is. I've seen the film. I can't remember if I've seen it. No, I'm confirming that.
Very good film. Yeah, 2003 was 21 Grams. So he's done three genuinely, I believe, to be excellent movies. Very different one from the other. Like when you compare 21 Grams to Birdman, to The Revenant, this guy, what, Babel as well, obviously you've got. So he's got four movies, we'll say. Babel was a good movie. Overhyped, I think I was a little bit late to the party with Babel. Like people... made out to be the freaking second coming of Christ. I liked it. I didn't love it. I was much more drawn to his other three movies. Birdman, I thought, was an incredible piece of experimental cinema. And The Revenant is one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen. Absolutely adored The Revenant. And he gets a lot out of his actors. Like, the, you know, this is the guy who directed DiCaprio to his Oscar. Let's just remember that, you know? He's a very, very talented man. So Iñárritu is my number nine. Is my number 10, sorry. In at number nine, again, arguably her best movie came out in the late 90s. It's something we discussed on podcast a while back, Ratcatcher. But I love the fact that she has such a unique voice, albeit a very depressing voice. But all of her movies have really, really left a mark on me. And then at number nine, I'm going to go with Lynn Ramsey.
Of course, yes.
She's an underappreciated diamond in the rough, and I wish she made more movies. You know, the one, and it's one of my favorite movies of the 21st century, is We Need to Talk About Kevin. What a film! Like, and what a voice she has in delivering graphic material. You know, Ratcatcher, which I appreciate was late 90s, is an incredible film. And her other Scottish movie, Morven Colour, which was noughties, amazing. And she's one of those directors, I think, even if you say to a lot of kind of hardcore movie fans, like, have you heard of Lynn Ramsey? Not a lot of people would have. And that's why I think, for edutainment purposes, I want her included here because she is what was it I said when we discussed her on the Scottish podcast. She is that oh so very rare, unfashionable yet brilliant commodity, a true artist. And I love her for that. And yeah, so Lynn Ramsey is definitely top 10 territory for me, in at my number 9. And 8 is the shocker, but I'm just before I bring him up, I'm gonna justify this quickly. I want to go through this guy's repertoire of films, because I know that this is gonna cause shock when I bring up the name. Let me just bring up his IMDb profile here. Sorry, bear with me, guys. And while that's loading, if this doesn't work, I will resort to using my phone. And at number 8, Steven Spielberg. Do we have a pint or not? It.
No, he nearly made the list. The old guard actually just didn't make the list on this occasion.
The old guard made the list for me because they've all done monumental movies. But Steven Spielberg, who, listen, as I said, for me, he's the greatest filmmaker who's ever lived. I can't think, like, there are only two genres of cinema that Steven Spielberg has not done. Westerns and triple X movies. There's a soundbite for you. Stick that one in your
mouth. Well, I mean, it depends how deep you troll into Pornhub. You may well have made a triple X Western.
Bro, can you imagine a Steven Spielberg directed porno? Like the grandiosity of the vagina. Like, it would look
John amazing. Williams score in the background.
So look, let me just go through his body of work in the 90s, and let's not be under any illusions here. The body of work in the 90s, in the 21st century, it is still like it would be the envy of most directors. But when compared to what he did in the 90s, nah. 90s and 80s, it's night and day. Like, when you consider that in the 90s he had things like Jurassic Park, Saving Private Ryan, Amistad, you go back earlier to the 80s and 70s, there was things like Close Encounters, Jewel. I love it. Jewel. This modern stuff does not touch his old stuff, but there is some good stuff. You know, you got Minority Report. You've got Catch Me If You Can. You've got The Terminal, which I actually really liked. War of the Worlds, I was so-so about War of the Worlds. It didn't really work for me. Munich was pretty good. But then we have some duds like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Yeesh, not so good. But then, you know, he reinvents himself and he does an animation. Tintin and the Secret of the Unicorn was really good. I had a blast of that. Lincoln, he managed to make what is... I don't know why he made the creative choice of taking a very, very, very boring section of Lincoln's life, but still somehow managed to make it really engaging. Granted, he had Daniel Day-Lewis, but it was good. Bridge of Spies, I haven't had a chance to see. The BFG, I found disappointing. The Post, I really got a kick out of that. Ready Player One was a lot of fun. West Side Story, you've mentioned, is brilliant. And The Fablemans I saw this year, which everyone was saying is like his magnum opus, it's not. Behave. It's not a Schindler's List or a Jurassic Park or a Jaws, but it is a very, very good movie. But it's not his like magnum opus. So, as you saw, that is still a damn impressive repertoire of films there. Minority Report, Catch Me If You Can, Bridge of Spies, you know, they're poor.
There were some greats. I think most people,
listen, if you said to any new aspiring director in the world, you'll be able to make one movie of that quality. Most people would take your left arm for that. He's done it year after year, just like making it rain. You know what I mean? Like the talent has not gone anywhere. But it's definitely a step down from earlier in his career. And it's still brilliant. So it speaks volumes.
No, I agree.
It's still brilliant, but it's a step down. So that's why Spielberg is in at 8 for me. Over to you.
Okay, so I'm kind of the same for you. You have to appreciate the title is of the 21st century. So as I said, a lot of the old guard, there were two old guards. Steven Spielberg being one, and there's another guy who runs the show. But they are just not... it hurt me to leave the second one out. This guy has had more misses than hits in the 21st century. However, when he hits, he hits big, right? Oh, I mean, and I just felt it wouldn't be appropriate to not pick up a guy who makes a box office movie and then outdoes himself as a box office movie. When competition comes along, he then crushes them. So in at number 10 for me is Mr. Yeah. James Cameron. Now, if it was for directors, you can't knock the guy. But a century, it is the Avatar franchise, you know? As much as I'm the man to wave the flag for T2, Dark Rising, or whatever it's called, is not T2. It came way too late to be T3. So there's...
Not his fault. And
coming up?
Not his fault.
It's not his fault, but it is just what it is, you know? And that's the problem. There was another film that he released. I can't remember what it was, and it just didn't hit. But if you talk at, you know, even down to Titanic, when the 25th anniversary was just coming out, it still made money. And this is it. When this man is on par and he does what he does, James Cameron is not to be messed with. What was it you said when they asked him about, they doubted him about Avatar? He's like, you guys seen Titanic? That paid for the building you're working in right now. Yeah. So just do as I say, please. And that's who he is. I felt remiss to not acknowledge that. So that is my number 10, James Cameron. It's two films that bang, but they will continue to bang. And let's
don't
be honest,
mess with Jimmy C. Don't bet against Jimmy C. It's not good for anyone to bet against Jimmy C.
You complete this decade, there will be another few Avatars. Yes, it's the same story told over and over again, but it's going to make money. I guarantee it. You know why? Because me, who hated it, will be seeing it in 4DX, baby. Anyway, we digress. So that's my number 10. In at number 9 are two gentlemen who, quite frankly, it's in the same category for me. This is the Three Things Are Sure in Life.
Okay.
These two brothers done their justice, because I saw Captain America and I said, forget about it. This is not the way the MCU is meant to go. However, they made a sequel for him and it banged. The third one, you're not a big fan of. And they created box office until Avatar came on. Yes, I'm talking the Russos, who are quite famous for creating most of the MCU work that we have grown to love, including Civil War. Now, that's the thing. If anyone could make me believe that Captain America... Not Civil War, sorry. Winter Soldier. If anyone can make me believe that when Captain America is worth watching on the big screen, it was these guys. Yes. What I saw with the first Avenger was absolutely nothing. And they built the film, The Winter Soldier. I know the story. And I said, I'm down with this guy. And they had the whole world on their... They took every story from every director and put it together. Yes, again, I'm aware the comic book was there, and gave us Infinity War and Endgame and hit the home run. So I had to give them their credit for that. Elsewhere, yes, they created the Gray Man, so they aren't continuous bangers out there, but they get...
Oh, and they also did that terrible Extraction movie. Yeah, so the Russos and Netflix don't get along.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, in at number 8, this is...
Yes.
He's done a few bits in prior to the 21st century, but I do respect the work that he's done. I've just not seen his entire body of work, and that's why it's so low. So then some people might be like, but he could be a lot higher. In at number 8 for me is David Fincher. Now, you go back to the 90s, you will get stuff like 7. However, even Fight Club, which just misses the 21st century, but Zodiac. Well, Benjamin Button is... If I was to rank him from the ones I've seen, Benjamin Button gets a bit of love. The Social Network and Zodiac are two very powerful movies that he has put out there. Yeah. And I was like, I need to see more of this guy. Have I seen enough? No. But what he has and what he delivers, yeah, just caught my attention.
Yeah, well played.
He has this grounded reality that he could, you know, he take real life situations. You take The Zodiac, which is all about the Zodiac killer. Sorry, Zodiac, which is about the Zodiac killer, and then The Social Network. and he grounds you and immerses you into this world, you know? Yep. So I know you're not a big fan of Gone Girl. I remember seeing part of the film, but the direction behind it, and again, it's just the ending that kills you. You follow the story from the beginning going on till that part.
Yeah, it's great.
Makes a lot of the direction it's is great.
And then the ending doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so you can have a fluffed ending, but the way he delivers it, there's one gentleman I wanted to bring out, sadly no longer with us. I don't know if he's on your list, but had a certain grit that I loved, you know.
You can bring him up. He's not on my list. You can bring him up.
Tony Scott. There was a certain grit that I love about what he delivers. Fincher's not far behind. He gives you this grounded rawness that you really appreciate watching on TV, on a screen. So yeah, he needed to get props from me.
I'm actually quite angry with myself that I forgot Tony Scott.
I had more brilliant 21st
century. Yeah, that's the thing. Well, listen, it's not all bad. That was your 8, right?
It was indeed, sir.
Yeah, so look, I love Tony, but I'm still doing the Scott name proud because in at number 7, I'm not even lying.
Perfect timing, right?
Literally, I'm not even lying. In at number 7 is Ridley Scott. Now, people might be going, huh? Ridley? Really? Hell yeah. Like, Ridley's body of work in the 21st century, despite the thing is, people always remember the duds, right? And he's had some duds, there's no doubt. House of Gucci, boy, God, that was bad. But go through some of his movie. Let's go through some of his movies in the 21st century because it's like, wow, Gladiator was the year 2000. That counts.
Of course, yeah.
That's one of the all-time great films. Possibly the greatest sword and sandals movie of all time. That was 21st century. Hannibal, which is the follow-up to Silence of the Lambs. Not as good. And obviously, it's always going to be measured up in quality to Silence of the Lambs, and it is not as good. But it had something interesting going on with it. There were parts of Hannibal that I actually really liked. Black Hawk Down was a good war movie.
Yes,
you love, bro. Matchstick Men.
Damn.
Now, one that I'm pretty sure we both love it. I love it. Kingdom of Heaven with Orlando Bloom and Liam Neeson and all, and Edward Norton.
I've missed that. I've not actually seen it. I've got
good. It's really, really good. American Gangster with Denzel and
Russell. I'm lacking.
Dude, yeah. Body of Lies with Russell Crowe and DiCaprio. I am an unabashed defender of that movie. One that people, I think it became trendy to hate on it. But I actually had a blast with it. Robin Hood in 2010.
See, because of all the pink, I must admit, I just joined in. I haven't actually even seen the film. It was like, yeah, just take the piss out of Russell Crowe.
I'm under the belief we're still to have the perfect Robin Hood movie. Like Prince of Thieves was fun, but there's good things to be had here too. I really enjoyed it. Prometheus in 2012, yes, while incredibly bloated and a bit self-indulgent, there was something interesting going on with Prometheus. Oh, bloody hell. Are we still here? Yes.
I'm here.
We got a huge. Yeah. We had a massive loading crank that happened with StreamYard. Let's see if we die or not. Exodus God and Kings, which is basically the Prince of Egypt live action. I enjoyed it. I know it was trendy to hate on it. I enjoyed it. So fuck everyone. Oh, can't say that. Yeah, there goes the monetization. The Martian with Matt Damon was excellent. Excellent. And yes, then there was the silly things like Alien Covenant, which were not good. But then he did All the Money in the World, which was excellent. And then No, dude, it's really good. And then he did that movie with Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, and Adam Driver, and Jodie Comer in 2021, The Last Duel.
Like, yes. That's one that's still on my list of things to see.
I'm sorry. Between Gladiator, between The Martian, between American Gangster, and all the others I just mentioned, this man has still been hitting hard in the 21st century.
Yeah. You've got some bangers there. I'm not gonna lie.
And it shocked me because I was under the opinion of like, oh, Ridley, Zaka, Spielberg, his glory days of the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do you know what? And it's weird, the same way you forgot Tony. I was so focused on Tony and I was like, a lot of it was pre-21st century. I was like, right. But I know everyone talks about Ridley, but it's the early days. And I wanted to show so much love to Tony, I completely forgot to look at what Ridley had done in the 21st century. Yeah, he would have made the list.
The problem with Ridley is that when he's done stinkers, they've been real stinkers. Like Alien Covenant and House of Gucci are real blemishes on his filmography. Like, ouch. But, dude, Gladiator, The Martian, Body of Lies, are you kidding me? These are movies that are beloved by a Movie Mount Rushmore podcast.
Yeah.
This is Silver Screen Dude's love, mate. This man has made movies that we adore. And in at number six for me, listen, he needs to step up his game based on his last two movies, but boy, he's done some bangers in the 21st century. He's another old war dog. I've got to bring in Martin Scorsese. Have to.
He was the one I was so hurt that I didn't have him in. And I know there were two very sentimental entries for me. I know it for a fact. It's
the last two movies he's done, I have not enjoyed. The Irishman, I have no time for. Like, none. It's bloated and self-indulgent. And Silence, which is like, at face value, the most Nicko movie ever. It's like, let's take Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver, have them directed by Martin Scorsese, and send them to Japan during the samurai era. Like, if you picked a recipe of how to make Nicko happy, you've just literally laid it out there. Here, tick, 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 tick. And it sucked. And because it was so boring, it hurt me that much more that everything I love is here and it's not being played with well. But
I hate.
But. He's also done two movies which for me are amongst some of the best of the 21st century, I'm afraid. And for that reason, he has to go on. Because while Ridley Scott, I think, has done more good movies than Martin Scorsese, the goodness or slash greatness of Scorsese's movies is even higher. Like, obviously, the ones that stick out. The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, is there a movie that we have laughed and lauded over more? It's crazy. Then you've got The Departed. The movie that finally, some would argue incorrectly, but finally won him his Oscar. Hugo was incredible. And then the one that people often forget. Well, the two that people often forget. Shutter Island was really good. I loved Shutter Island. I had such fun with it. And while I have an issue with where this movie ended, the movie was good. The Aviator was a really, really interesting story. I just wish the movie had started where it ended, but still the story we got was very interesting.
Yeah. Shutter Island, I must admit, I thought it was him and I Googled and for some reason I didn't see, I don't know what happened.
Oh, you know what else? I've just going through his IMDb, you know what else we've forgotten? Gangs of New York.
See, Gangs of New York, I appreciate the film, but I'm not the biggest fan. I'm going to be honest. That wouldn't be the winner for me. I know for a lot of people, it's like sacred ground. There's something about it that's slightly hit. Shutter Island is the one that is like, damn, I forgot. Like Wolf of Wall Street, Departed, I know what I'm talking about, you know, straight away.
Yeah.
Shutter Island probably would have been the one that secured it. Hugo, allow me to remember the film. That's the problem with that one. And I didn't have a chance to rewatch it. Yeah, there was more hits, but again, I started to look at the misses. There have been a few misses with Martin Scorsese, not just the last
recent ones.
The two recent ones. And there was a few others I remember you saying as well before.
I really, really, really hope that this, you know, the trailer looks fantastic for his new movie, Killers of the Flower Moon. You've got his two muses finally together. You've got DiCaprio and De Niro in a movie together. I mean, this should work.
Should.
But honestly.
The same way the Irishman was bringing back the whole clan. And it should have been perfect. You
had Keitel, Pesci, De Niro, and Pacino all together. That should have worked. That was Martin Scorsese doing a gangster movie with his gangster muses again. It should have worked. No, it didn't.
Still can't bring myself
to the samurai thing and the knives and the Spider-Man and sending them to Japan and get the flub out of here. Didn't work. While I think Killers of the Flower Moon looks amazing and while the story sounds amazing, this also runs the risk of being a slow-paced, bloated period drama. And I really hope that it has some panache to it.
Yeah.
Because three for three, you know my rule. Three strikes and you're out. And don't put me in a position. Guy Ritchie was nearly out for me. He did two bad movies in a row. Then he came back with Rock and Roller and I was like, we can be friends again. But don't make me self-cancel Martin Scorsese. Marty,
It's that possibility. And it's just like, and do you know what scares me before I go into my numbers? 7 and 6 is what scares me with Scorsese is that he's so anti Marvel at the moment that he might try to be so grounded in a film that he ends up boring the world. And that's what bugs me. That's what scares me with him.
Well, this is the thing. And with the greatest of respect to the great man, one of the greatest filmmakers ever, not the greatest, but one of the greatest, top three, maybe top five, but yeah, between top three to top five ever. It's starting a little bit to feel like ramblings of an old geriatric.
Respectfully, you know, I can.
Ridley Scott was guilty of it too. What he did with Alien Covenant, I was like, stop it now, stop it right now, because this is now getting geriatric.
There comes a point where, you know, go back to one of our previous shows of this week or last week, should I say? By the time this is released, Throwback Thursday. I realize how much I've been talking about Last Action Hero, which was 30 years old. Like, there are times you need to appreciate that you need to move with the times and you need to know what you are. Sometimes your storytelling just becomes a bit old man. It is what it is. Father time waits on none of us. It's just the way it goes.
Yeah. And I hope that's good not the case. I hope we get a banger. But look, that's my 7 and 6. What's your 7?
So I was gonna you know, sci-fi is a weird genre, but there is one man who has mastered it. And I was like, do I really want to go through that? Sci-fi and fantasy, because I don't want to kick off the argument. And I was like, does this man deserve a spot? And I realized he can do action. It took me a while to see this action, but he done Mission Impossible 3. He's done Star Trek. He's done Star Wars. You got to show some love to J.J. Abrams, man. Like, this guy, he's found a way of telling stories. I know my poster says Super 8. I've not seen Super 8, so I won't go into that.
Super 8 is excellent.
But this is what I'm understanding. Like, I've heard the love for it. And he has found a way to give people a genre that's out there, but it's not getting as much love as it used to. You know, for the better part of it, the biggest argument is Star Wars fantasy or sci-fi. To the keen eye, I see in space, they're going to say it's sci-fi. He has a way of telling that story. Even if it is fantasy, whichever way, he knows what he's doing. It was so trusted that the big war of Star Wars versus Star Trek is like, hey, I like what you've done with Star Trek. Come over here. Like, it's fact. It's that. And I remember my biggest shock was when I was down with the big C. I was going to say the big C, but I don't want to get people thinking I had that one. COVID. now that we're allowed to say it again. You know, and I went and I said, I'm going to finally do all my Mission Impossibles because I had stopped at 2. And I thought he was the man behind number 3. And I was like, ooh, this is interesting. How would it go? And it was amazing. He does well. He has an eye. He knows how to tell a story. So, yeah.
Hasn't made a movie now for 4 years, huh?
Been a while. But selective. I can appreciate selective. The same way I can say James Cameron, like, 2 hits, and that's the big ones that gave him the part.
That's true.
If Abraham sits back and he makes sure that, like, you know, go back to the poster that I've got out there. Please tell me which one of these films is a miss. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no, I can't. Didn't he also do the third Star Trek movie, eh?
No, it wasn't ever Fred.
I can't remember. Yeah, not a boy.
But there we go. You lost the man, and then you lost the magic. He knows what he's doing with a product, and that's why I have to give him his respect.
See, I'm looking at his upcoming in production filmography now. He's only got 2 things coming out, and they're both TV shows. That makes me sad.
Yeah.
Because I remember when he was literally Hollywood's new shiny toy.
Yeah. He was, and it's a bit weird that he's not. Don't know what he's done. Don't know who he's upset, but it happens.
Well, Star Wars fans.
That's the problem. That is the problem. They have
voices. The most toxic film community out there. I know I'm one of them.
Good. I like the honesty.
Oh, I'm not proud of it.
I'm now toying with you. No, bro, but it's the honesty. Look, I'm a wrestling fan. I know it's as toxic as it gets, but that's a different conversation for a different time. Mm. My number 6, I'm toying with swapping him with my number 5. I am actually going to swap it because I think this guy, he's starting with number 7. He's now going to be my number 5. So in at number 6 is a guy
I just remembered someone I've forgotten. Jesus. Oh, what an idiot. Okay, carry on. I'm going to shoot myself.
I'm sure you've got him.
Possibly.
He might
be coming up now. It might be coming up now. He is one of our icons from a previous decade. However, for the 21st century, it's not as strong as it was, but he is still giving films. And some people believe that this film is one of my all-time favorites. So, yes, of course, Quentin Tarantino was still going to make the...
Yes.
The poster shows Reservoir Dogs and Jackie Brown and Pulp Fiction, but Kill Bill 1 and 2 still banged. Death Race, not so much. Inglourious, Django. I haven't finished the film yet, but Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as well. Like, he still has it.
No, he's got it. He's still got
it. Not, you know, it's not been as great. You know, like before, it was like, oh, a Tarantino film, and you couldn't help but just run out there. You know, Hateful Eight, as much as I found it enjoyable, was that the film that I said the N-word? Like, I even said the N-word was just, like, way too many. I think
you found the Hateful Eight enjoyable?
I actually didn't mind it that much. I didn't say it was great. Oh. But I could actually enjoy it. You know, it had its moments. It's not Kill Bill. It depends how you rate it. For a Tarantino, it's not the greatest. As a film to just casually go by, yes. But no, it's not Inglourious. It's not Kill Bill. It would never be in that conversation. Do you know what I mean? That's the problem. Hateful
Eight. Oh, I hated it.
Even for me, it nearly even made One Location last week because it had something. You know? But it lacked at the same time, and that was the thing. So.
Yes, anything.
So, you know, he had to be mentioned. And again, there is this story. Do I believe it? I'm still not too sure, but it's what will be his 10th movie. What is the final one? What is that number 10? What is Tarantino's final film?
Yeah, and if it's the final one, I still remain to be convinced about that. I think, as with anything, I think if you reverse enough dump trucks of money onto someone's lawn, they accept. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I'm looking at you. tell me I'm wrong.
I made my argument, but it's not looking good for The Rock at the moment, is it? It's just...
Oh, it's funny. It's like that. I don't wish evil on Dwayne, but anyway, that's you can tune into Silver Screen News if you want to hear us talk about other things than this topic. Available on our YouTube channel, which you can go and watch now. And if you do like YouTube, I would like to just remind everyone you can support us by heading on over to buymeacoffee.com/moviedudes. And for literally less than the price of your daily Starbucks, you can support us at a level that is right by you. Also, guys, a quick reminder, please do like the video if you haven't done so already. And if one sort of hour-long video is a bit too much for you guys to consume on YouTube, we are also available on Spotify in podcast format, so do check us out there. Right. With all that said, over to my number five. I'm praising this guy because he's revived the genre. He's revived the genre and had to work with one of the hardest situations I think a director can work with, which is a death of one of his main stars. I've got to give it to the master, James Wan. I think he's incredible. James... Punting on James Wan. Yes, boy. Right, you're number five.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it. The guy who was my number seven is now gonna be my number four. He's not moving any further than that, but he's gonna be my number four. My number five is the other half of the AJ old school that I said maybe it's sentimental how high they are, but I've pushed them up a bit, down a bit anyway. Yeah, he's done some great stuff. He's one of the Brits. There we go, Guy Ritchie. Now, I know you said he has had a few misses along the way, but Snatch is still 21st century. It's 2000.
Is it actually? Wow.
Yeah. Snatch just makes the cut. The Man from Uncle was quite enjoyable. The Gentleman was a revival.
Brilliant.
Rock and Roller, which you mentioned, falls into that category. As much as it's not great, I actually like what he done with Aladdin, because let's be honest, to be fair, these live actions aren't great, but you make the most of what you can in the way of telling the story. There are some parts that's missing. I will not take away from that. Primarily the part that really bugged you with Jafar, and I totally understand that and totally support you with why that should be annoying. It needs to be done. But, you know, let's not forget Sherlock Holmes. Those were brilliant. And that's where I have to give him credit, that as much as I...
Well, the first Sherlock Holmes is brilliant.
Yeah, I'll give you that as well. What gets to me is when I think Guy Ritchie, I think Lock, Stock and Snatch. And that's what is like his pantheon, you know? It's like, it's not that. It sucks. But stop and look at it. He's given himself a bit of variety and made it work, you know? Like, and with that, I have to respect
I'm going to add to that. I'm going to say something on the record now. I'm putting The Gentleman in that category.
Yeah. It's a bit of an ode to, but like, yeah.
It's brilliant, brilliant filmmaking, The Gentleman.
Yeah. And, you know, Operation Fortune, I've not had the pleasure of seeing just yet. I know it's on Amazon, so I'll give it a buzz. But there's something that Guy Ritchie does. Like, I'm not going to talk about Revolver. I'm not going to talk about that stuff he done with Madonna, which were really, really bad, you know?
Yeah, you see, we were talking about Scorsese a moment ago, and we were saying three strikes and you're out. Yeah, Guy Ritchie did those two back-to-back.
Those two were terrible. But no, Guy's done some good stuff, and that's why I had to give him his respect. So.
Yeah. Dude, well done. I completely forgot about Guy and Quentin. Well done.
Cool. So that was my number... Yeah, five. Over to you.
Five, yeah. My four, listen, this, I think one of the greatest testaments you can say as a director is something we've attributed to Tony Scott. You know, when I've said, you know, when you're watching a Tony Scott movie, you can just tell.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. AJ, my number four, you can definitely tell when you're watching a Wes Anderson movie.
Something told me he was going to be on your list. I knew he was going to be on your list. Yeah,
of course.
I love the picture because it represents his quirkiness.
Dude, some people think that his shtick is old. There is no doubt that there's a lot of copy and pasting with his visual style. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
It's him.
It's his thumbprint. That's literally him. When you are watching, it doesn't matter if it's Grand Budapest Hotel, The French Dispatch, his new one, Asteroid City, looks amazing. But, you know, when you even the animes he does, like The Claymation, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Isle of Dogs, like, I love this guy. I love his visual style. I love his storytelling sensibilities. I love the fact that he's not afraid to touch on taboo topics and kind of do a little fun spinny twist on them. Kind of makes it cutesy pootsy. That's not a word, but there you go. I always like someone who's a master at their craft and who knows how to make an audience realize that they're watching a X movie. And with Wes, you just know, man, his pastel colors, his obsession, arguably unhealthy obsession with symmetry and his attention to detail on crafting every single shot so that it purposefully feels overproduced and that overproduction lends itself to the overall aesthetic of the movie. I can't swear. I love him. Yeah. Oh, it's hard not swearing. Jesus.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. But hey, we're keeping it clean. We're keeping it clean. There's a new channel, new rules. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So annoying. How am I going to ever be able to review True Lies again?
You'll do it. You'll do it. You'll find a way.
It's never going to be reviewed by me again. It sucks. All right. What is your number four, AJ?
No, I can't. I can't move this guy up again. I can't move him up.
Do it, bruv. If you
move, I'm doing it. I'm moving him up again. Number seven has now become number three, but that's where he stays because he's not becoming number two. But in at number four. Really? Yeah. Interesting. Now, when I break it down, you'll see what it is. But in at number four now, previously number three. Anyway, yeah. Damien Aronofsky.
Darren Aronofsky.
Darren, sorry. Where did I get Damien from? I'm confusing with Chazelle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damien Darren Aronofsky said, and he's done it twice. Genius. Late night recording, guys. Genius. Be careful what you're doing. So I have to be honest. Genius. Requiem for a Dream is not for me. I'm not gonna lie and make it be like it is. I remember Yash was telling me he loved the film and I was watching it, tried to watch it then and I was like, what's this? Then we were doing something, I can't remember what topic it was, tried it again, and it just did not work. However, let's bring this, but I've not seen Noah. Pi, interesting film. Black Swan. The Wrestler, those films, the style he has with that is insane. It's intricate. It's wild. It can have a grit and it's surreal at the same time. He has this surrealism to him.
He's also a superb writer, mate. He wrote The Whale and he also wrote...
Thank you, The Whale. I knew there was some... Do you know what it is? Yeah. So as you can see, some posters I've got, I created others. They were like, that was Aronofsky's one was made. I was like, oh, I don't need to do anything. Like, he literally had his picture and the slides next to it, The Whale. And this is the stuff that he's produced, you know? And I was like, you have something.
But he also did that Steve Jobs movie with Fassbender. He wrote the script for that as well. Brilliant. Yeah. I think he may have directed that, although I may be wrong. Don't quote me on that.
Do you know, I had to double check that. I had to double check that and I forgot to check it.
Carry on, I'll check it out.
Yeah, so there's just something about the way he tells the story. Now, if he did direct that Fassbender movie as well, that is one of the films that I've had the most appreciation for in the form of storytelling. And I'd have to rate him so much more as a director if it was him.
He didn't direct, all right. Danny Boyle directed, and it wasn't Aronofsky who wrote it, it was Aaron Sorkin.
Yes. Okay. But yeah, no, there's something very much interesting, and it's the surreal. I like the surreal in the way he tells the story. Black Swan is a film that just threw me off so much. I was just not prepared for it. Being a wrestling fan who is aware of what happens behind the curtain, obviously I've not lived the life, the way Randy the Ram's story is portrayed and told, and it shows you the other side of that fake crap that people keep talking about. Oh, I loved it. And I've got to show respect to it. And yeah, Pi's been a while, so I've got a bit of a memory blank on that. But I also remember that being a deep film.
The Wrestler was amazing.
No, not The Wrestler. Pi. Pi was a film. I can't remember. I'm blanking.
Never seen it. Bit,
so I've seen it. I can't remember. We were talking about... Is it Downey movie? Something. I can't remember what it was, but yeah. It was...
Movies with the number in the title?
Could it be? It wasn't that one, but yeah. Yeah. A lot of respect to this guy.
All these old podcasts that we're referring to, guys, if we've got like 6 season back catalog, as you can see from the video below, like... yeah, 6 seasons of the movie Mount Rushmore. It's all available. It's more long format than what you're watching now and listening to now. It's sort of up to 2.5 hours long where we have more banter, more tangents. But, you know, we're keeping it tight for you now. But there is 6 seasons of the Rushmore podcast if you do want to listen to it. So my number three. Yes? Yes, no? Have I lost AJ?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I'm here.
So my number three... Nah, I'm pushing him up.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pushing him up. I'm going with a hipster vote here if I put this other guy at two. I'm swapping two and three. So my number three, listen, I think it's very hard in the 21st century to not acknowledge Korean cinema. It has to be done. And the man, there's a lot of directors I could have gone for here. Wong Kar-wai was one that really, really stood out as well as nearly making it on. But I've had to go with Bong Joon-ho.
Of course. I get that. I get that.
What? Parasite is obviously the movie that sticks out, and it's the one I'm going to focus on now. But where I praise him so much is for mass popularizing Korean cinema. Much like we were talking, you know, much like I'm sure we'll talk about James Wan and, you know, reinvigorating something for the masses. And in this case, it's very hard to sell your average cinema goer on a foreign film. Like, very hard. Most people don't like reading subtitles in movies. Subconsciously, this may or may not be true, but it's something that I've noticed amongst cinema goers. People also like seeing characters that they can attach to and relate to. It's a normal part of the cinema going experience. Here in the UK, yes, we have a huge Asian population, but, you know, it's still predominantly black or white.
Yeah.
Right? The Asian population are still very much a minority here. So to encourage people to go and watch a Far Eastern movie with subtitles, not a given. And yet this guy is put, not single-handedly, but he has put Korean cinema on the map to the degree that now you say to people, there's a show called Squid Games on. So what's that? Oh, it's like a Hunger Games, but it's Korean. Oh, yeah, I'll watch that.
Yeah,
you know, you hear, oh, it's done. Train to Busan. What's that? Oh, it's like a zombie movie, but it's a Korean zombie movie. Oh. Yeah, I'd be interested to see that. You know, the moment you kind of saying something is Korean has kind of become sexy.
Yeah, I get that.
It's this, but it's Korean. It's like, oh, yeah, I'd like to see what these guys have done there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that is due to him and his peers. And I think he's one of the best at what he does. The meticulousness with which he crafts social narrative, I don't think there's anyone who does it better than him.
I can't argue. That's pretty factual. There's a lot you can get from Parasite that really shows you like so much in terms of character detail. Yeah, I'm pretty down with that. I can't.
Bong Joon-ho is my number three. Your number three?
Right. It's the one who was number seven. Each time I looked at the other contenders, I just had to bring this guy up. It is the punt from earlier, James Wan. Like,
yeah,
honestly, like, let's just look at this poster here. I know what you said about when your main star passes, being Paul Walker in Fast 7. We talked about this before on a previous pod, or I can't remember what it was, but we talked about superheroes that make money. You say the word Batman, you say the word Superman, you say the word name Wonder Woman or Spider-Man, it's money. Marvel were able to create the other names, you know. Iron Man was never as big as Batman previously. It's just fact. always at the bottom of the list was Aquaman.
Oh, yeah.
Who has made money? Yeah. Who has made money? Okay, it's down as like Momoa, I'm aware, but this guy directed it. Yeah, the one that made money.
He went with his casting director to pick this guy and said, why don't we make him a badass Hawaiian dude?
Yeah. And that was it. And this is what he's done. He made Aquaman a success. He created a universe in a genre that I don't appreciate and made me want to pay attention to it. The Conjuring universe. He has mastered that. And yeah, Fast 7 as well. Like, I'm not just going to just breeze over Fast 7. That was one of the most challenging situations. And the way he directed it, as I said, and one of the things that he has said is the thing I've learned to appreciate. I morbidly, quite disgustingly, I'll put it out there, tried to figure out the parts that wasn't Paul Walker. And he has gone out and said, we will never tell you what was him from what wasn't him. And that's the way we'll maintain it. And that was the magic. And when I heard, when I read that, I was like, wow, that is actually more touching that way. And I respect the hell out of it. And I stick with it. You know, I don't regret it and feel like I'm going to watch the film to find out which is the CG part of all. No, it's not that. And this is one of the names that I thought, yeah, the more I look at this guy's body of work. And again, I don't do horror, but I like what he's done with The Conjuring.
But AJ, here's what's fascinating. It's not just The Conjuring and Annabelle. He's also responsible for Insidious. He's also responsible for Malignant. Like, this guy is a horror master. Like, it's like, and what's so clever about him is that he has understood and he treats his audience with respect. And I like filmmakers who do that. He's realized I can't just do lots of blood and guts in horror. I can't just do tried and tested tropes and hope they stay fresh. I can't do jump scares. I need to reinvent the wheel to make horror interesting again. And ultimately, the thing about The Conjuring is full of jump scares, but they're reinvented. It's full of tried and tested materials. There's nothing original about exorcisms, but it's kind of had a spin on it. There's nothing original about the Haunted House movies. Oh, but Insidious kind of made it new again. He just knows cinema and knows how to make it feel fresh.
And if I'm not mistaken, he's involved in, is it the new Saw or the previous Saw? Like, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing.
He does. I'll give him credit. He's a genius. He's an absolute genius, James Wan. My number, that was your two.
That was my three. Onto your
two. All right. Oh, my two. Dude, he's only done four movies. Three of them. Yeah, it is three of them. Damn. Two of them for sure are some of my favorite ever. Third one, I don't know if I'd yet put it as favorite ever because I only saw it once and it was this year in the cinema. And even the movie which people say, oh, that was his dud. I'm like, if that's his dud movie, that just shows how good this guy is. Dude, Damien Chazelle.
So this is the thing. I was tempted with Chazelle, but I have two films.
They're quite good, though, aren't they?
It was La La Land and it was Whiplash. And it helped me so much to not put Whiplash in any conversation, you know?
Yeah.
That was the thing. I have not seen Babylon. Had I seen Babylon, I might have been more on it. That's a legit truth. I just felt like I needed more work from the guy. That's why he's not on my list.
I completely agree with the small body of work. You know what La La Land means to me.
No, do you know what? Do you know what it is? I didn't know that he... So what, he's only done four films?
Yeah.
See, now that would have changed the conversation. That puts him in the Abraham's conversation. Like, when I Googled it, I saw a load of pictures. And with that, I was like, oh, I've not seen this. I've not seen that. I don't know what capacity he was in it for then. And that annoys me because he would have definitely been in the conversation. Because two out of four is 50% of his work. Now I can talk about it.
Mm.
Yeah, fair play.
And for me, it's 75% of his work I have utterly loved. I don't know what went wrong with Babylon. I know that it had a mega budget on it, and I know that people just did not flock out to see it. I don't get it. I cannot fathom why people didn't see that movie. Okay. It was literally singing in the rain, crossed with Pulp Fiction. I'm like, everything I need. You're number
two. Sorry, my window has to close now because I am inviting too many dogs in this.
Yes, it's very hot in the UK, and unfortunately, because we live in the UK, our houses are not built with air conditioning units for our international audience, because we never expected global warming to be a thing in for temperatures in London to get well over 30 degrees, but yet here we are, sweating and hoping that we get some form of breeze coming into our windows, and unfortunately, with these hot conditions and open windows, you get bugs.
Yeah,
and AJ's in full Starship Troop. Yeah, and AJ's in full Starship
Troop. Not the way I'm here to celebrate film today. So, sorry, they're flying in front of me now, and that's what's bugging me. I'm trying to do a pod, and I'm all over the place. I was even going to edit it. I'm not going to edit it. I'm going to keep it for the way it is because I know you're going to be talking about something. And you're going to be seeing AJ like this, and it's going to be like, why was he doing that? So now we're going to have to show it that I've got two of these dirty long legs. I actually thought there was a moth, which isn't in here, so I'm kind of happy. I need to keep my voice down because the missus will kill me because she did not want windows open during the night because of this very reason, and she was right. So
never let them know that.
I know.
You're number two.
In at number two, I'm a Disney darling, and this is Disney's darling as far as I'm concerned. He's done their Marvel, he's done Star Wars, he's done Disney. Live action, animated into live action. I'm talking about none other than Jon Favreau. Whether it be TV, whether it be film, the guy just delivers. Again, as I said previously, live action remakes aren't the thing because there's a certain magic you lose with animation. But what he was able to do with both The Jungle Book and The Lion King, I respect the hell out of. I've not seen it, but I take your word very highly. I respect your words really much, a lot. Ooh, get it out, Ant. I really respect your words. And the fact that you could put The Mandalorian down as probably the best that Star Wars has to offer, and he's been a director in that as well. He's been involved in those bits. And then even stuff outside of that realm, yes, he's been... Like Iron Man. Iron Man opened the MCU. He was the man behind that, you know? He's done that. And then to take stuff like Chef. Chef is an absolute brilliant film. Chef is amazing.
I love Chef.
Absolutely amazing. And I can't knock the guy for it. And it's so weird that when I had to look up who this Jon Favreau keep hearing is, he was the guy who got his rear end smacked and handed to him as the wannabe UFC fighter.
Yeah.
There's no way that this is the same guy. It's absolutely insane. Yet here we are.
It's crazy. It's
weird. But yeah, I've got nothing but respect for what Favreau delivers.
Don't know if I would have put him that high, but you know, not my list.
I looked at it and I looked at the variety in what he does. Whether it be film or TV, people are calling for him. The fact that it could be your big MCUs, it could be your star, like the big IPs are looking for him. And then small, not independent, I'm not going to call Chef independent, but a smaller film like Chef, still he creates it. And that's where I was like, you know what? Props to the guy.
Yes. I'd give you that. I am just doing a quick... Oh God! Oh, it makes for depressing reading.
Hit me.
Cool. Very good. So my worst.
Can I guess?
Of course.
You know me well. I know you well, and I'm guessing we might know each other very well to be able to guess each other. Like hands down, there was a big middle finger in your review for his film before. Obviously, it has to be Michael Bay for you.
100%. Michael Bay is the worst director of the 21st century. Now, where people have always had an iota of an argument with me in the past with Michael Bay is that they've been able to turn around to me and said, but he did The Rock. Ah, ha, 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 ha. You've just lost that privilege. Ha, 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 ha. The Rock was nice.
21st century, baby.
The Rock was a 90s movie, guys. Oh, but the guy who did Bad Boys, you lost that privilege too. No, that's gone, I'm afraid. You do not have much to stand on here. Now,
I will say there are some Michael Bay movies that I have enjoyed. The first Transformers movie, I don't think people would disagree, is a fun, good movie. I am a defender of Transformers 2 and 3. 3 is less hard to defend. 2 is much harder to defend, but I still get a massive kick out of it. And then it makes for painful reading. Like, this is actually painful, some of this stuff. So you've got The Island in 2005, which was okay. Bad Boys 2, I know you're a fan of. Aside from that crazy chase with the speedboat in the Ferrari and on that massive long road, I don't think, and the Woosa, I don't think that movie had a lot to offer. I think it was very, very cookie cutter action. And I don't think it had the soul of the first one, which was much cooler for me. 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, 2/3 of that movie were actually very good. So you see, objectively, there is some praise I can heap on the guy. Yeah. But dude, when it's bad, it's so bad. Like, it is so bad. Transformers 4 was an insult to the fans. It felt like him saying, I know he fully embraced Henry Hill. F you, pay me. He knew he could get away with doing what he wanted. It's like, oh, no, no. Here's Optimus Prime. Oh, you like the Dinobots? Pay me. Here's the Dinobots. But we're going to completely butcher the IP that you love. Why? Because we know you're going to pay us. We don't need to make an effort. F you. Then he retconned himself with Transformers 5 and somehow made it even worse. Like, I'm actually not going to go into it. There's a review out there. Just search for it. Six Underground, that Netflix thing he did with Ryan Reynolds, is possibly one of the worst films I have ever seen. Genuinely. It's awful. You've got Ambulance in 2022. That won a Razzie for some of the worst filmmaking ever. And it is. It really is. And then you've got Pain and Gain, which people actually say, yeah, it's, and I'm saying this for the new audiences. I know you've heard this before, AJ. People go, but what about Pain and Gain? Pain and Gain was good. Here's the thing. Pain and Gain was actually a well-made movie until you peel back the layers of narrative sensibility. Okay? Because here's the thing. Pain and Gain, you've got to remember, is a real life story. These are real people who died. Now, there's nothing wrong with telling the real story of real people who died. That's absolutely fine. It's what cinema does literally all the time. Regularly. Like, it's just a thing. You know, if someone died, you make a story about it. But here's the thing. You can't talk about people dying knowing that their family members are going to be watching this movie and you haven't been given express permission from the families to use these people's stories, and then you make a comedy out of it. No, 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 no. And for anyone who disagrees with that, imagine one of your parents died. Someone came to you. Someone didn't come to you and ask for permission to do a story about your parent dying and then made a comedy about your mother being killed. I'm sorry, there's no human being alive unless you've got a really bad relationship with your mom, and in which case I feel bad for you. But no human being alive is going to want to see the murder of their mother played out on screen in front of them. Those people you're seeing played in that movie, that's someone's father, that's someone's son, that's someone's brother that is being turned into a comedy. It's not cool. It's just not okay. It's not.
Yeah.
He's an awful, awful man for doing that. Your worst.
Do you want to take a stab or should I just go
for it? Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, God, no.
No?
Oh, God, no. No, come on. We've got Glass and Split and the rest. No, he's fine.
I was going to say, like, I thought you were good. That would have been my guess. Worst. Ah, Ang Lee.
100% correct. This guy is miss after miss after miss. Whether it be Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, whether it be Hulk, the guy who is the blueprint is simple, Aang. Calm man gets angry, turns into a beast. No. We're going to make it Greco-Roman tragedy. It did not work. Brokeback Mountain. Now, yes, I'm aware it won an Oscar, and no, I'm not homophobic, and that's not the reason why. I just found the film bland. I can accept it, but it was bland. It was overhyped. The most overhyped film. Come again? And that was the next one I'm going to bring up. I didn't put the poster up, and I forgot about it, and I nearly redone an image for it because Gemini Man bored the living pants off of me. I fell asleep. There are films, again, I never hide it. I have sleep apnea. I sometimes crash in front of most films. It takes me a long time to finish a film. And then there are the films that I say, I'm not going back to. I don't care. And this was one of them. I just felt, I saw what the ending was, and I was like, this is the biggest pile of pants you gave. And the advert made it look like it was something, you know, a man has to face his past or whatever. It looked like it was going to be something. Oh, my days, I've never been so wrong in my life. Yeah, absolute pants. So, yeah, sorry, Aang, but you just can't do it for me. I listen, some people hit a lot and miss most here and there. This guy misses most of the time. He hits. I quite enjoyed Life of Pi. There was Man Eat, Woman Love, Pray. I'm mixing two films here. Yeah, I can't remember what it was called, but that was a good film. It was pre-21st century, mind you. So I'm not going to hate on the guy. Yes, he can do good. But yeah, exactly. It doesn't count. Life of Pi does, but it's not enough to redeem the guy. He sucks. So yeah, I'm sorry, but my worst is most definitely Ang Lee. And it's funny, you know, because I wrote his name on the list of directors that came to mind. I was like, I wonder if he can sway me. Will there be some films that go, oh, it's not so bad? Going back to M. Night, you know, I was like, yeah, no. There are some, not all of it's for me, but I can work with what you're giving me. Then I thought, do I want to look for anything Will Ferrell might have been involved in? I was like, I'm not going to be that prat. And yeah, Ang Lee just didn't disappoint me. He remained my worst.
I imagine we've both got the same number one then.
I hope so. It'd be weird if he's not on your list at this, like,
right?
Yeah.
All right, Christopher Nolan.
Indeed. So here's my poster, like, just to give
me.
Okay, that's you. And this is the poster I've got because, like, you can't joke with it. Yeah. I mean, I've put a poster of the Dark Knight trilogy because that's what most people would sometimes think of and be like, "Is that no?" As much as I'm down with the Dark Knight. Prestige is one of the greatest films I have ever seen.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to go a bit wrestling here. There's a guy called Sheamus out there, guys. And when he talks about his matches, he says he puts out banger.
Banger after banger after banger after banger.
And that is Christopher Nolan.
It's a banger.
Don't get me wrong. He's had flops. Tenet is one of them. I'm not here to say he's not.
I think he's the only one.
Yeah. I could even go with that. The rest of them, like, the guy's not missed much, man.
Prestige, talk about Interstellar.
Inception.
It's amazing. Inception. Memento. Yeah. Insomnia. He made Robin Williams the bad guy.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Dunkirk.
Yeah, Dunkirk. I remember Dunkirk really got me when I saw that film, man.
So, like, good.
He delivers. He absolutely delivers. It's one of those things. I'm not going to lie. Oppenheimer
looks incredible, by the way.
Can we go?
Oppenheimer looks incredible.
Oh, yeah. 100% agree. 100% agree. And, you know, it's really funny because, like, Nolan came into my head. And at first, he was like middle ground, and I was like third or fourth. And the more I started to look at the other directors, I was like, no, this is the guy. It is. The body of work speaks for itself.
Genuinely, the only director, and I include Spielberg, Scorsese. Yes, when you see a movie, the new movie from Tarantino, Scorsese, from Spielberg, it still has something. Scorsese's movies have also gone straight to streaming. Spielberg's movies have been hit and miss. Tarantino's have been hit and miss. When a Nolan movie comes along now, it's an event.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you that. Really is an event. And other than the Batman movies, these are not big IPs he's dealing with. These are all original stories. These are all things that for your average audience member are a very hard sell. Because again, it's crazy to say this, but your average audience member sees between 3 to 10 movies a year. That's not a lot of films. People are very, very selective about where they spend their hard-earned money and on what. It's very difficult to convince people to spend their money on an untried, untested, unproven commodity, which is essentially a Christopher Nolan movie.
If I ever said to you, go and watch a film about entering people's dreams, you're going to tell me, what is this cheap wannabe Friday the Nightmare on Elm Street?
Yes.
Piece of crap. I don't want to know. Forget it. Nice try. That is the initial inception anyone's going to reception. Yet the film banged. I know then the tech will disagree, but it banged.
I want you to go and watch a movie about two magicians trying to do better magic than each other.
Yeah.
Are you joking?
Yeah.
Why would I watch that? Oh, because.
And trust me, you can go wrong. Illusionist. Like it's not it's not always guaranteed to go right.
Yeah. I'm going to go and I want you to go and watch a space movie where there's no space battles and where they're talking for most of it about physics. What? No, it's great. I want you to go and watch a World War II movie where you never see the Germans. What?
Just yes. one German. Yeah. Literally see one German.
I'm sorry. The guy's a genius. He is a genius. People often say like he's the second coming of Spielberg. I'm like, nah, he's the first coming of Christopher Nolan.
Respect the man. He's doing what he's doing. Don't make him somebody else.
Rushmore.
Yeah.
Nolan.
Well, so there's one guy who's definitely on there. So Nolan on one, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, I would agree with that. I pick one, you pick one? Would you want to debate?
Do I want Tarantino or Ritchie?
Oh, between those two, you must put Tarantino on, surely.
I know. I'm just thinking if they're even worth being in the conversation. It's weird to say that.
Tarantino is for sure. For sure.
Yeah, but when people think Tarantino is 20th century, not 21st century. Be real.
I don't agree. A lot of people's favorite Tarantino movie, I don't agree with it, but a lot of people's favorite Tarantino movie now is Inglourious Basterds. Tarantino has to go on, bro. That's a great shout. Okay. See, I got the harder task because I could put one of the three old war dogs on, but then who'd you pick?
I don't want to do that? Because I feel like people are going to do it on past credit. As much as it's going to say 21st century, but come on, man. This is the guy who gave us Casino. This is the guy. No.
This is
the guy who gave us Jurassic Park. It's not that. That's not the conversation I'm here for.
So help me out. Would you go Damien Chazelle or Wes Anderson?
I think you're being very brave going Wes Anderson because it's something that can be so niche in terms of appreciation.
Yeah, right.
And then Chazelle, I don't know if he's got enough in the catalogue, if I'm honest.
I actually don't know who to pick then, bro. You may have to...
Abrahams?
No, absolutely not. Yeah, I'm not incurring the wrath of the Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
Bong Joon-ho, should we be international? Otherwise, only got Lynn Ramsey, Inarritu. Well, could go Inarritu.
I was between that and Ridley.
The problem with Ridley, which is I've heard... necessarily agree with is that the blemishes are so bad that that's what people are going to gravitate towards. If it was a toss-up between Ridley and Inuritu, for the sake of Twitter, I'd probably go Inuritu.
Go for it. Let's do it.
Yeah?
That makes sense.
Ladies and gentlemen, the official movie Mount Rushmore of directors of the 21st century, in no particular order, is
Inuritu.
Our second entry is
Quentin Tarantino.
Our third entry is
James Wan.
Our final entry into the movie Mount Rushmore of directors of the 21st century is
Christopher Nolan.
Yes, wrap it up.
Yeah, okay, guys, so you know what to do. We've done it. Now it's over to you. The challenge is over to you to crown the best director of the 21st century. How do you do that? You head on over to at movie MT Rushmore, or more importantly, the person that we'll be retweeting, good old JT from We Love Movies, at movie polls for you. It's there. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Make sure you've liked it. Make sure you've shared it. Make sure you commented, because it all means the world to us. And you know what? You'll be back to a live show before you know it. But more importantly, guys, we're on Spotify and YouTube, so spread the word as much as you can, please.
Yes, and there should be another video right here between us now, or kind of just below us, which you can click on to watch more of our content right here on the YouTube channel. And we will see you guys next week for more Top 10s. Again, keep it on the YouTube channel for daily content that's coming out. But I'm Nico, he's AJ. We'll see you guys either tomorrow on another video or next week for the Top 10 show. See ya.
See ya.